Next Chapter Podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to How I Got Greenlit. I'm Alex Collegian for my co-host Ryan Gibson. He's in Bali shooting. No, he's not. He's at home and I'm doing it because that's my job. That's why we're here. This week we have Grace Patterson Part 2. Another great woman filmmaker with an incredible story. I'm loving what we're discovering with these people. You see their bios, you think you're going to hear one story, and then there's six lives before the film life. And that's the best part. In this case, Grace was a professional cheerleader, which I think is amazing and hilarious, because that is right there is the epicenter of the cultural shift that we're living through together. And she was on the front lines of the old way, you know, and it's not old, it's still there. Incredible nonetheless that such a thing still exists, that the roots of it, how she learned from it, how she enjoyed it for the dance and the performance of it and didn't get caught up in the rest of it. And how that informed her work ethic for what she wanted to do or what she discovered to do, which is make movies. So we get to learn more about that. And in the process, we do our little gem that we love for selfishly is for a filmmaker to recommend a film that we haven't seen. And a lot of times we call it a B-side. For this one, she brought Hush, directed by Mike Flanagan, 2016. Very intense horror movie, incredible. And something that I wouldn't have watched otherwise, no offense to anybody. I'm just usually not that intense in my sort of horror thriller. And so that's what I like. A new person, a new influence. Grace, it's a huge film for her, very influential to her, and maybe a window into her more than just her words or more than just her work is influences and inspirations. So without further ado, please enjoy Grace Patterson, writer, actor, producer, Grace Patterson, as she continues her conversation with Ryan Gibson. And I'm Alex Collegian, and you are listening to How I Got Greenlit.
Like, you do a Lifetime movie, they're pretty tight budgets. I mean, we don't need to get into the nuts and bolts, but Ryan and I will tell you that they're pretty goddamn tight budgets, and they're shot on a tight schedule.
Yeah. 13 days normally, right?
It's basically... They use TV people who are used to a 7 to 10 day schedule. And they go like, okay, you're doing two TV episodes back to back and you're going to shoot in this Vancouver suburb and you're going to do X, Y, Z, and then you're out.
Are they block shooting this, Grace, the one that you're doing right now?
No.
They're not.
Yeah.
Block shooting gang means that if there's a location where it's the living room of the house, they will just shoot every single scene that takes place in the living room of the house at once. So you don't have to move all the trucks and all the equipment and then they're done. Ryan, I would say block shooting is more applicable for a series.
Oh no, we do it in movies now too, buddy.
No, I mean, everybody does it.
A lot of the Lifetime movies do that, but this one's honestly been running very, very smoothly. And yeah, we haven't done over a 12-hour day, which is insane. That's, no, I honestly can't believe how smooth this one's going. But we do it. We're doing it in 14 days. So usually you do 20 pages a day. I mean, this one we've been doing not that many, maybe 8 or 9, and it's been no over 12 hours. It's crazy.
So 3 or 4 pages a day is a good day for a feature, guys. So
so we're doing 20, definitely a lot, but
pretty extraordinary.
And are you non-union, Grace?
Yeah, I'm eligible, but I just haven't joined yet. But I think I'm a mesh join, so I think the next SAG project I do, I'll have to join.
No, but I'm saying, are the grips and electrics and every camera, is it a non-union project?
Yes.
It is a non-union project.
Would you ascribe that efficiency to most of the crew has done 10 of them? And they're this is how we do it. Bang, 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 bang.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah. Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a machine.
They got to have content. Lifetime has to have content, and they
got a Lifetime. Got a Lifetime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Part of Fear the Cheer, a killer month of movies.
And so, Grace, would you say, you know, we're talking about, you know, part of the show is this greenlit moment. What was your time that you kind of looked at yourself in the mirror or just had like 10 seconds to yourself and you're like, holy, I'm actually making my dream come true. And it doesn't have to be in front of the camera because you have a lot of other stuff that you do. So do you remember thinking, wow, I've really made it?
I had that moment. So I had done the two Lifetime movies, Killer Cheerleader, whatever. And so I booked my bigger role in Who's Killing the Cheerleaders. I wasn't a lead, but it was like, I think number 5 on the call sheet, which was the highest I had been. And so I was like really excited about that. And that production company was about to do Just What the Doctor Ordered, which is an Eric Roberts movie. And so at this point, I'd never even been like number 2 on the call sheet. I'd never been number 1, like nothing. And
well,
so
wait, stop right there. Just listeners, the pecking order on a set is what order you are. There's a call sheet, which is literally like the people that are working that day, where to go, their contact information. Mm-hmm. And the higher up you're listed on that sheet determines your importance. It's a very literal like pecking order.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3.
You are 4th important. If a meteor hits, we will throw you in front of the number 1 person.
It's kind of like knowing who comes after the president and vice president are dead.
That's it's exactly.
It is. Speaker of the House is third.
Yeah. So it's a good feeling when you show up and you go, I'm number 3.
Yeah, when the call sheet comes in the night before.
You're climbing. Yes. And so anyway, I was only number 5 and like I heard they were doing the Eric Roberts movie. So I reached out to the casting director and I was like, I really want to audition for this. And I went to like the producers. I'm like, hey, I really want like this role. And you know, they were looking at me. I'm like a number 5 on the call sheet. And they're kind of like, oh, okay, like maybe. And it was a cheer movie. And they're like, we don't know if Grace could really pull off something like this. Like she's like such like a cheerleader or whatever. Like no one really took me like seriously yet. And so anyways, I basically harassed them enough where they were like, let's just give it to her. And so I found I was doing the Eric Roberts movie. So I was going to be number 2, him number 1, me number 2. And we're going to shoot it in Georgia. And then I had just recently like cold emailed a bunch of managers and I got a meeting with Industry Entertainment, which they rep like Joey King, Debbie Ryan. They rep like they're up there. And I had a meeting and my manager, Mark, said he wanted to sign me. So this all happened like within the same 2 days. Like I found out I'm doing the Eric Roberts movie. I signed with a great manager and then I found out too that I was offered another movie where I was going to go straight from filming this to Oklahoma and I was going to be number 1 on the call sheet for Cheer for Your Life. Like it all happened within like 3 days. And I remember I was in my hotel in Georgia and I had worked local hire for the first one. And then now they were like paying for my hotel and paying for my travel. And that's the first time that had happened to me. And I was in my hotel and I was like, oh my gosh, what if all my dreams come true? And that was, it was like, I just remember sitting there and I couldn't sleep like all night long. I was just thinking like, what if it all comes true? Like I felt so crazy. And that just like, I just literally like all night long just thought about like, oh my gosh, like what if it all comes true? And I think that was probably the moment where I just all of a sudden felt like I'm not that crazy. Like this is happening and it's happening pretty fast. Like I caught some momentum then. And so I feel like that was definitely my moment. And I was like so nervous to do a movie with Eric Roberts. I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot. I feel like I'm going to be so scared. But it went great.
And now you are a working actor.
Yeah.
This is your job. Along with the 12 other jobs that you have. But those are because you want. Are because you want to.
Yeah.
I'm going to read them off. Dying to be a cheerleader.
Yes.
Who is killing the cheerleaders? Mm-hmm. The Pom Pom Murders, mm-hmm. Killer Cheer Mom.
Oh, that one. That.
Deadly Cheer Mom. Ugh. And mm-hmm. Cheer for Your Life.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's all my cheer movies.
Have you ever been the killer, Grace?
Now you're the murderer.
Have I ever been the murderer?
Have you been the murderer?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
no.
They're missing an opportunity there with you.
I think that it's coming. You know, I think that.
Oh, you should be killing your competition. In fact, it should be called Killer Competition.
Killer Competition. That would be so great. I thought I was going to be the killer in this one when I was reading the script. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm going to be the killer, but I'm not.
Do you want to be the
killer? Yeah, I would love to.
I think it'd be great.
I, Yeah, I love playing like things different from me. Well, maybe I'm a little crazy, so maybe you want to be that far off.
I'm gonna say this might, the audience might, if I didn't know you as well as I do, the audience might get mad at me for saying this, but it would be kind of sadistic to hear your like flowing positivity as you're murdering someone. Like,
I think so too.
Because you're
It's
not that far. Laugh. There's a thin line between your laugh it's being evil. Like fun, and your laugh being like I'm killing you.
No, I know. People always say I have like kind of a slightly evil laugh.
Yeah, and so a bit.
I know I would love to play like Harley Quinn or something. You know, I want to do something. Like,
oh, Grace. That would be great.
I would be great for that, right? Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm such a psycho laugh. I think it's going to come around, honestly. Like eventually the laugh is going to pull through because people always comment on my laugh. Like
you're infectious. You're infectious.
But I used to get so bullied for it. People like used to bully me so much for my laugh. And now it's the thing I get complimented the most on, which is crazy.
See how it works, kids? That thing that you hate becomes the thing that makes you.
It is. And I had like stopped laughing for a long time because I was so embarrassed because I was so embarrassed. I was so bullied for my laugh. So I was like trying to be quiet. No, but it is good to tell kids. I'm like, whatever people are bullying you for, it's because it stands out about you.
That is like a gift,
and don't like put it
down.
Don't
shun it.
Don't shun it. Like let it shine. You know, and people would always, when I was young, they're like, actor. I remember this girl was my age and she was like, you need to act. Don't act your shoe size. Cause I was acting just like, yeah, I'm just goofy. Like even to this day. And she's like, you need to be more mature. And because I was just like running around, you know me, Ryan, I'm like cartwheeling. I'm just like crazy. And I'm just like having fun at all times. And I was embarrassed by that too. And now that's also what people compliment me the most on, is that I'm just like crazy and I don't care. So keep doing it.
That's pretty much it. The show's over, folks. There it is. There's our the more you know message for the day. I have to say from pretty much minute one, as soon as I met you, I was like, oh my God, this person is infectious. You're just really like someone who has taken levels of success, taking things hard, you know, dealing with the ebbs and flows of life, and yet just constantly being a positive person. And I think you're that, the more you know moment that you just said is totally true. You have to just stick with who you are. Don't try to hide it because it's really your greatest.
Which is, by the way, I said earlier that women are competitive with women. I think people are, right?
Oh,
I
we're all, yeah, 100%.
Like, we're just shitty. I love that, like, because I have kids and Ryan has a child and there's an assumption like, oh, you know, you have to teach racism and stuff. Well, sure, but kids are shitty. Mm-hmm. Like kids are exclusionary. Kids are like judgy. Kids are just kind of shitty on a certain level. So,
But do you think your kids are racist? Like, do you think children are naturally racist? Cause I
think kids are lookist. There's all kinds of studies that if you put a baby in a room and you have a beautiful person and a not beautiful person, the baby will always choose a beautiful person.
Stupid babies.
Wow. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Like it's like if you get a compliment from a kid, you know it's real. You know what I mean? If a kid's like, you know, you're annoying, then you know it's a real it's real.
Yeah. And like, no, I remember like if let's say they've never been in a room with a small person or an African American person, they will point and be like, who's
well,
that?
Well, I think kids are inquisitive.
They're not like, who's that but I think lower that, form of life?
Kids
they'll just
are
be like, what is that?
To begin with, yeah. We are way off the reservation on this topic.
No, I'm just saying like the people suck, I think is what I'm coming down to.
From the womb, you're saying.
From the womb. And it's also gender neutral. Like there is something to be said about a tribal species such as ourselves, where there is constant competition from the second they're born, even within a family, right? Even the stories of like the twin that chokes out the other twin in the womb, like there's some level of cruelty within us, right?
Cain and Abel, baby.
Yeah. And so when you see that, like you're totally right. I've heard a million stories of like, I don't know, Uma Thurman. Yeah. You know, I was like 5'10 at like 12 and they would make fun of me. And now everyone's like, oh, the statuesque beauty, you know, like there's a lot of these sort of tales of like people that are awkward.
You're definitely right about that. There's a lot of folks who have been able to I don't want to say monetize, that sounds terrible, but people who have taken their what they thought was their worst part of them and actually becomes their thing that they're famous
for. Their attribute. Yeah.
That's why you have to stay. You have to stay strong. And it's hard. It's hard when you're getting punched in the face every day.
Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. It is. But I'm glad that I didn't change, huh?
Yeah. So would you count like a big acting role as your moment when you, like Ryan said, when you gave up like a side gig or a day job and you became a professional actor, would you call that like you're green lighting yourself into this entertainment business? Or would you feel like producing and writing and becoming more of the creator of the actual film or show as more of a greenlit moment? Like, what do you see yourself as? Where would you personally find that feeling of personal satisfaction?
I mean, acting is definitely like what I love the most and my number one passion in the world. So I feel like when I have like a big moment where I'm like booking a bunch of roles, or like even this movie was straight to offer, which is like feels so crazy. I'm like, what? Like a straight to offer? Like that's so it, because that's only happened to me a couple of times, but I'm starting to be recognizable enough to where everything's going straight to offer, which feels like, but I definitely want to do more. I mean, I just produced this sci-fi movie called Reflect. We just had our screening of it in Los Angeles. I wasn't there, unfortunately, but that was really cool to be on that side of it. And I think that's like a greenlit moment in a sense that my dream is bigger than just acting. And that's why I like launched my loungewear company, because I was like, I want to eventually have my own production company. I'm going to call it Hollywood Monster. I already have it as mine, and then I'm going to put like my loungewear and my clothing, Bad Kiss, into the films I had written a professional cheerleading TV show, and I actually pitched it to HBO Max. I like harassed them. I like messaged the executives on Instagram. I'm like, hey, listen, I need to talk to you. I have a TV show to pitch you. And they actually let me get on a Zoom call with them and pitch it to them. And they like read my script. They didn't end up buying it or anything, but you know, it was a cool moment too.
It didn't stop you though.
It didn't stop me, of course. Yeah. And then actually that I got hired to write another script because I wrote that and people like read it and were like, wow, you're such a great writer. I'm like, wait, really? Like, so it is just kind of like acting has opened up a whole creative side of me where I'm like, okay, I don't have to just stop at acting. Like, it is so fun to be on the producing side. It's fun to write. It's fun to like, you know, be creative with my designs and like start a company. And I know that it will all like intertwine one day for my like ultimate goal and vision. When I have my production company, my clothes are in it, and I'm like writing my own films. So that's where I want to go. But yeah, I don't know. Acting's still number one, of course. Like, that's my number one passion.
Did you do the sci-fi film with someone else in your family? Because I did notice there was another Patterson involved in that.
Yes, I cast my cousin in it.
You did?
Yes, I cast her.
And that's the one you filmed out in the desert?
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah. And then actually, that's the cousin I did the home movies with. She grew up on the farm with me.
And what's the name of that movie again?
Reflect.
And is there a distribution deal for that right now, or?
We have a couple like offers on the table. So we're just like finalizing everything and figuring out where we want to go with it. But yeah, we got like so much great feedback, and like even a lot of like directors that were there were like messaging me like, oh my gosh, like, cause my friend Dana knows me so well. She wrote this script. So she got to like, she knows my range as an actress. She knows like my personality. So I think it was a great role for me, because not many people, you know, they see me and they're like, cool, like we'll write this like one dimensional, like she's a cheerleader role, but Dana knows like I can crank you. I can do this. Like I have like range. So she wrote all of that for me. So you see like me acting crazy and fun. And then you see like me angry and sobbing. And she like just gave me this like awesome character to play with. So I'm excited that like I had the opportunity.
It's just so cool to know. And I think for audience members who are listening, that you just doubled down and tripled down, that's not even a thing, but you just doubled down on who you are as a person. And you're just taking it, you just take it to the next level every day. Every day you are hustling. Yeah. It's crazy. I'm so glad we met. And I really appreciate, you know, if you guys have time out there, you should check out Bad Kiss. You should definitely check out Grace's range of movies she's been in and will continue to be in, because it's just really amazing how you've taken something that you love so much and gave up. You basically were like, I'm not doing that. And how quickly it's just turned around for you. If you don't, it's a true story of following your dreams, you know, Grace?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think if I'm going to go for this, I'm not going to do it half-assed. You know, if I'm going to really burn my old life to the ground and go for this, I'm literally going to not go half-assed. Like, I'm going to give this everything I have. And it has taken everything I have. This is literally all I do. From the moment I wake up, from the moment I go to bed, there's not much room for social life or all these things. But at the end of the day, I love this and this is my passion. And yeah, I'm not going to do it half-assed.
Yeah. It's something to look up to.
No, it's exciting, Grace. And I'm glad you're doing it. My one observation is, as a fellow excited entrepreneur, whatever, is avoid the shotgun. Think about how all this fits into the larger narrative.
Yeah.
Okay. Because your energy and your enthusiasm may last, but I don't know what it is, if it's human nature or if it's this business, but it seems like there's a predominant outlook, and we've heard it again and again from guests, and I've seen it in my life, Ryan's seen it in his life, is whatever you're known for, they just want you to know you for that.
Yeah.
Right? There's a pigeonholing, and I know that your efforts are in no small part to try to avoid the pigeonholing, mm-hmm. to be everything, but my analogy to success in Hollywood is there's two ways to pop a balloon. You can grab it in both hands and push on all sides with a lot of effort and finally pop it. Or you can just take a pin and with no effort, just pop it. Mm. So when you're going forward, try to remember who you are,
yeah.
and what you want to be when you grow up, and always back up from that destination. So even if somebody comes at you and says, hey, we can do a blah, 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 and it's really cool and you'd be great for it and whatever, just always put it through the filter of is that going to get me there?
Or
is that going to lead me astray? Not in a bad way. I mean, sometimes life is and I had no idea and here I am, you know, but you seem very driven in a specific way, mm-hmm. not just, hey, I want to do stuff. You're no, I'm going here, I'm doing this. And maybe you have people you are emulating or whatever, mm-hmm. but I would say to most people, you're doing great. I'm not saying you're to change a thing. I'm saying for people like you or people that want to be like
advice,
you.
Advice to the masses.
Just put it through the filter of what do I want to be when I grow up? And that can change.
Yeah.
But at least have a destination. And every time you get up and every time a potential job comes up or every time a potential idea for a script or a collaboration with a friend or whatever, whatever, always just ask yourself, does this serve that need?
Because
I've been active and I've been reactive in my life. And I see when I look back that maybe if I was a little bit more focused, you know, eyes on the prize, as they used to say, that maybe I might have made decisions that would have got me to where I want to be, as opposed to the long way around.
I have to ask, since we're talking about this, and this is this is serious, and I don't think we're handing advice out, unsolicited advice or thoughts out to the audience. But do you think that this has anything to do with Alex? And we go back a long way. Do you think this has to go back as the creator of Project Greenlight? When you had your opportunity to continue on in that genre or that workspace, that you moved away from that? Is that why you give that advice?
Yeah. I mean, that's a specific, I could give you personal and business.
No, I think the audience, yes.
Well, yeah. So the story with that is that I met a guy at a party and I was actually hitting him up for a job in scripted TV. And so I did like you. Hey, you're doing this? Great. Let's go out to lunch. I want to pitch you on that. Oh, you're doing that? I can do that for you. You know, I was hard selling to do the thing that he wanted to do. What I happened to do was, and this is a fun Hollywood pitch or drinks meeting or whatever, which is you're there for the reason you're there. And then once you kind of say your piece, it's more social and you're just kind of bullshitting. So after I had pitched myself on like, here's why I should direct your Clerks animated TV show, which is that's how long that was. I was saying we were just bullshitting. And I said to the guy, well, you know, it's funny. There's this show Real World that I like to watch with my wife. And it's hilarious because it's a bunch of young people together and they're all stupid and they all have, you know, blah, blah, blah. But what if they made them make a film? Because every film I've been on has been crazy and there's always misadventures and people don't know what they're doing and egos come into it and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I don't even give a shit about your whole fucking spiel with the animated thing, but that's the best idea I've ever heard. Come meet my boss. So it, I didn't mean to. And then the next thing you know, the machine was moving in that direction. And I woke up, you know, 2 years later with a big agent at William Morris and like a production deal at ABC and a lot of money and like Emmy nominations and blah, 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 and movie stars. And I was like, great. And, you know, you meet with William Morris and you go, I don't know about this reality stuff, but here's a script I wrote. And they were like, give us some more of that reality shit, kid. You know, and that's all we want to hear from you. And I basically had to have two careers going and insist that they give me a scripted agent and insist that they would send me out on scripted meetings. And eventually I got both going, you know? And then of course the writer's strike happened and then fucking kneecapped me. But it's just, you know, life happens, right? And I'm glad it happened. And I'm very proud of the show and I'm very proud of how it changed my life, how it changed other people's lives. And it's actually one of the few shows that I feel are a positive net outcome, whereas some other reality shows, not all, but some can be exploitive. They can mislead the people in it. They can mislead the audience. They can edit to make people seem to be enemies and mean people when they're really just normal folks. And I don't necessarily like where the most of the business went. But yeah, I mean, Ryan, to be honest, like, yeah, you're busting me. Like that was a thing. But here's the reality, Grace, and I'd say it to Ryan too. In summation, yes, there's an argument that—
And by the way, I didn't mean to bust you. I just thought maybe that was—
No, I think it's a good example and you're understanding why I'm saying it, right? That's the root of why I'm saying it. But it's a double-edged sword. I don't know— You know, none of my scripted, I made decent money as a screenwriter and other things that were more, elicited more personal satisfaction for me. But I would say like since the year 2002, I've spent the better part of my adult life trying to not be the guy that just did Project Greenlight.
Yeah. That's what I was saying is that I think some of the candid conversations you and I have had, there have been times where you've said, you know, you and I remember when we first met, you were like, I don't want to do this reality thing. Although you probably could have farmed from that field for the rest of your life, but you had other dreams. And
oh, yeah. I mean, look, I'll give you an example. I won't name names, but I'm working on, and I always keep my hand in because if only because I want to do it my way.
Join us on other episodes of How I Got Greenlit, like the time we spoke to director Ollie Blackburn about his process while working on the Starz show, Dangerous Liaisons.
We had a sequence with a wonderful actress and she just wasn't quite, you know, it was a scene with her son and she just wasn't quite nailing it. It just wasn't happening. We were shooting. And it was a complicated thing. And this wasn't planned at all. We were setting up a very complicated shot and I just started talking to her. We ended up talking about her mum and her relationship with her mum. And she was just talking and talking. I let her talk. It was actually pretty interesting what she was saying. And then the camera was ready and we called action. And fucking hell, she blew through the scene. And at the end of it, she was like, I don't know what you did there. I don't know what the conversation did, but it just unlocked everything.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's what acting is you're channeling these things deep inside you at some very primal level. And often subconsciously you're using them. And that's a powerful thing.
Look for this and other interviews in our archive at How I Got Greenlit at a podcast provider near you.
Should we talk about Hush?
Yes. Do y'all love that movie too?
Oh man, it's on my favorite top list of movies.
Movies that I've seen.
Wait,
recently.
For real? Wait, what?
All right, let me talk. I want to say, look. So the director is what's his name? Mike Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan,
who ended up writing and directing Dr. Sleep
with his wife.
Oh, is the star of Hush? Is that his wife?
Yes.
Kate Segal.
Nepotism.
Yes, they're so cute. They like came up with the idea on a date before they got married.
Sorry, go ahead. But look, Flanagan has worked for Blumhouse. I don't know him personally. I didn't see Dr. Sleep.
I like Dr. Sleep. It's a tough. That's a tall order.
I can't even imagine.
To a Kubrick movie.
Kubrick is my favorite director. If anyone who knows me, I love the original, obviously, and I never saw it.
The Shining?
Another good throwback to The Simpsons. But he's worked for Blumhouse for a long time. He's made quite a few successful movies. This is one of his earlier ones. I would definitely say Grace got an A on the assignment because this definitely is a B-side of his. Yeah. I watched it. It is horrific. The murders are very personal, and they're shocking to me. Every when the guy gets stabbed. Look, there's going to be spoilers in this. Sorry, this is going to be. But I thought there was really cool things done with sound design because basically it's a woman. There's four actors in this. It was shot in Alabama. On one location in a house in the woods, a very simple premise, a Blumhouse, Blumhouse, just like Lifetime has their way. They stamp out movies. Blumhouse does the exact same thing. They're very successful at it. It is a business model. Four actors, small crew, and they pulled off this movie that is a horrifying concept, which is deaf woman living in a cabin, trying to finish a novel, gets basically attacked by some random dude that wants to murder her in a mask. Yeah. And I'm glad they didn't play the mask the whole time. Mm-hmm. And the deaths are horrifying. When the man, John, I think it's John, comes up to the window and is like, hey, and then the killer acts like a cop and is like, hey, and he just stabs him right in the neck in that one like quick move. And that's that is exactly how it'd be to die if you got stabbed in the neck.
Yeah. No, it's so good. And it's interesting too, because there's only like 15 minutes of dialogue in the movie because I was like reading. And so he said, Mike was like, I listened to an interview. He was saying it was like a hard sell because like it's like one location. There's like no dialogue really in the movie, but it's so terrifying. I remember watching it years ago on Netflix.
My favorite stabbing story for movies is when they were making Lord of the Rings and, spoiler alert, Saruman, played by Christopher Lee, gets stabbed in the back. And so the director says to him, okay, you're going to get stabbed and you're going to go, and you're going to really ham it up. And Christopher Lee, who was in the OSS in World War II, he's like, so that's not what happens when you stab someone in the back. And I can tell you with firsthand experience. And he was like, okay, do it your way and action. Yes. Crazy, right?
So crazy.
Because I guess it's not a screaming. It's not pain. There's no pain.
It's more like an exhalation, like a surprise. You're just like,
just got stabbed. Damn.
And I happened to just rewatch that recently. And I'm like, there it is.
There it is.
My thing with Hush also is that I kept thinking, which is probably the thing that I'm not sure how many other people were thinking this was, she can't hear the level of noise that she's creating when she's sneaking around. Mm-hmm. And if she's deaf from the beginning, from birth, she would never know how much sound she was ever generating. So like, how could she, like, I almost wanted to do a comedy I was kind of running a comedy version in my head where everything that she was doing was like knocking over a drawer of cutlery. Like she would take a small step and it would sound like a drawer of cutlery hit the ground. I kept thinking like she's making way too much noise right now. But the sound design, because she couldn't hear it, the way they did the sound design was quite genius. And I thought that fading in and out of that sound design was pretty damn cool. I thought that was a cool effect. The deaths, however, like when she gets her head bashed in, I was like, oh my God, she just died. I didn't even see it as a dream. Maybe, I don't know, like brutal murders from just some random guy. And you know what? Yeah. That's really horrifying because Blumhouse does this very well, I think. Mm-hmm. That's the way people get murdered sometimes. Sometimes just randomly somebody comes into your house and murders you. And that's life.
That's life.
It's sad to say.
And death. That's death.
It is.
It is a simple concept. Mm-hmm. Well executed.
Yeah.
But I'm always more of afraid of the simple stuff. Like it scares the shit. That particular subgenre of like, I'm just sitting in my house and some rando just like like the Manson.
Yeah,
thing,
that's
right?
Exactly right.
That was
it's
the
too
modern
real. That's
like
why
paradigm.
It's scary because it's like it's that could happen.
Like I'm in my house. Yeah, yeah. It's not like I'm at a tropical island and a shark decides to eat me. That's like, well, just avoid tropical islands. But you can't avoid like your living room, right?
That, I love horror movies like that where like, it's real. Yeah.
It's very personal.
You can really imagine it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Him killing the redhead.
Like The Strangers, that kind of shit.
Yes.
Just like,
oh, that
really gets me. Especially when you're watching it in your house.
Yes, you're
at
like
night,
anybody could just alone. Bust in and kill me.
Like you have to turn the lights on. It's kind of like even when you're like a grown up and you're like, I'm fucking scared. This imaginary like dancing lights in my face are changing my like mood.
Yeah.
Like
how you I'm have to reach around right the corner to turn on the hall light before you get into the hall after you watch a horror movie.
Will they stab my hand? I better be. Yeah.
It's a really, I enjoyed it. I liked it. I have to say, it's not something that I would normally pick to watch, but I watched it because we were going to talk about it. And obviously now I'm really interested in what he did with, you know, he wrote Dr. Sleep. So I'm really interested. Now I'm going to go back and watch Dr. Sleep. So
he did Haunting of Hill House too.
Yeah, he's done a lot. Mm-hmm. He's done actually quite a few. This definitely was one of his B-sides. This was early in his career.
$1 million budget. $1 million.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and executed very well. The, you know, not fancy, not a lot of fancy lighting, although I'm sure it wasn't easy. And then, I liked it. Alex, how did you feel about it?
Again, pretty much the same. I like some horror movies sometimes. I'm probably more thriller than horror, or more like horror than slasher, let's say. But, and a lot of people have said this, after you direct a movie, you never shit on movies again.
Yeah.
And I used, and Ryan will tell you, I was like
lead shitter.
King shit. That sucks. Here's why. Blah, blah. You know, and like, but then you make a movie. And you see how fucking hard it is and how much goes in. You just basically like you take 3 years of your life and you pull it out like a kidney and a gallbladder and maybe like a half a lung, and you slide it over to the movie god, and the movie god hands you a hard drive like, here you go. And so I never shit on movies anymore, whether I like it or not. Now, I like this one, but most of it was from a respect level. Wow. They did a lot with a little, or, oh, that was a cool shot. And knowing that it was a limited budget and an early film in the career. And do you know what I mean? Like a sliding scale judgment. It's just that some people can't get enough of this genre. Like they're just in.
It checked every.
I love business, horror movies. I'm like, I'm in always.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's age or demo, you know, like horror movies are more for women. Did you know that?
I believe it. Yeah.
Demo's huge for women. Why? Because you are afraid of getting murdered when you walk down a street.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
I mean, that's what
it.
they did. Like, why is that? You know, why is that? Is because you must have fear. You must have a higher percentage of healthy fear in your everyday life in order to survive as a woman, any woman.
Yeah.
And men don't know that. Men don't feel that. But some men like horror for their own reasons. But I know that women love true crime podcasts, Lifetime movies about husbands that aren't what they appear, and any horror movie, because it's a catharsis of your everyday fear.
Yeah.
Wow. I did not.
I didn't think about it like that, but that makes total sense because I love Crime Junkie. I love all the crime podcasts and love
because you're like, okay, I can, that's better now.
Yeah.
Like, you know, she made it. Yeah. You know?
Barely.
Like, oh, Jamie Lee Curtis made it.
Barely made it.
Or whatever, you know. So Jamie Lee Curtis lives to fight another day. Great. You know, it's always that same message, which is like, oh, the big bad sheriff got whacked and the handsome football boyfriend got whacked. But, you know, the little girl with the pluck, she made it out.
Yeah.
Was there a reason, Grace, you picked this movie specifically, or?
I don't know. I just love horror movies. And I was like, I thought about it the other day. We were talking about it on set. And then you asked me and I was like, that's like such a great movie that a lot of people don't really know about. But I love when I find someone who's seen it.
I would recommend it.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I watched it in college and I remember it just like always stuck with me. Like that it was just, yeah. I don't know. I loved it.
I'm going to throw out a little thought that I had at the end of the movie. Hmm. So did you notice that at the end of the movie, when the police car was arriving, that she did this really weird kind of evil wry smile?
No.
Yeah. So at the very end of the movie, before it cuts in the police car, and it's basically a close up of her face sitting on the deck of the house. She has this very wry, evil smile. And it made me wonder why. And that maybe I have really bad thoughts in my head, but it made me wonder, did she hire the guy to do it because she couldn't finish her novel? And did she hire the guy to do it? And why was John there in the first place? Why did he show up? And why would he kill the redheaded girlfriend first? Because she'd gone away. Where did she go? She went to her house. Like, you should come over. So was it close enough for her to walk? It just made me think at the end, if you watch like the last 5 seconds of the movie, she has this wry smile on her face. And I was like, oh, she was the reason why all this happened.
No, I'm going to have to like go Google this and like see if I can. I love when movies make you think like that. Yeah. I'll have to Google it and see if anybody else noticed that.
I watched three people very personally get killed, and even the lead actress get killed by getting her head bashed in. And it just was like, this all seems way too personal. Like all the deaths were way too personal. And when he's coming in through the tub, that scene is pretty awesome. He breathes on the back of her. She just should have killed him right there, stabbed him in the head, but she didn't do it. She got him in the arm. He got winged a few times. He wasn't going to live through the night anyway without medical help. So, and then the corkscrew to the neck kind of finished that. By the way, super realistic blood, super realistic injury. Usually, Grace, you know, we do these movies, these B-side movies. Sometimes the conversations are short. Sometimes the conversations are long. I'm not sure we need to go any further on this one. What do you think, Grace? Do you have anything else to say about Hush?
No, I think that if you like horror movies, you should watch it if you're listening.
Yeah, that's right.
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely is a B-side. And Flanagan, he continues to work. He's got projects coming up.
Yeah, I saw.
Yeah, he's does he still make movies with his, they're married now? Do you know if he still makes movies?
Yeah, they still do. She was in Haunting of Hill House, and then I don't know if she was in Doctor Sleep, but it seems like I know they're still married. They're like a power team, power couple.
Right. I did notice she was like in four of his first like five or six films.
Yeah. I saw that too. I was like, that's so cute.
Yeah. And probably as a producer too. Is she a good, do you find her to be a good actress? A good actress?
Yes. I think she's great. Yeah.
Is she actually deaf?
No.
It's pretty impressive.
I know. That's what I think that's a really hard performance to do something like that. Like no dialogue, like everything's literally just like, I'm playing deaf. I can't even imagine. Like, I think she's really talented.
She wasn't screaming or like, it was all very, like all the sound design was really cool. I got to give him credit for the sound design. It was cool. It was really cool.
Yeah.
Well executed. I have to say, Alex, feel the same?
Yeah. I mean, as I said, again, like technically really well done, a lot with a little. I'm always impressed with that. And most people aren't, right? I mean, that's the nice thing is I think the predominant. I don't think there's a lot of film snobs that love horror movies. I think there is some, but mostly it's just average people that just want an entertainment or
release,
an escape. And yeah, like catharsis, catharsis, mm-hmm. as the Greeks would say, but it delivers.
Yeah.
There's a reason the guy is successful and that Warner's would give him, I don't know, what was that? $75 million, $90 million Dr. Sleep. I mean, you got to look at that and say, yeah, look what this guy did with a million. What's he going to do with,
right,
like, you know,
right, right,
80?
And Ewan McGregor.
And Ewan. Yeah. So, you know, thank you for, and that's what's fun is like we get exposed to stuff that maybe in our own little like bubble, you know, I know that I'm kind of I've settled into the genres that I like, and maybe I don't go a far afield.
No, it was cool to see something outside of what I would normally watch.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So thank you for that. And thank you for everything. I mean, it's great. We get all kinds here, which is great. But it's fun to meet, how do I say this? It's fun to talk to and work with younger filmmakers because they allow me to remember why I'm here.
Oh, I love that.
And why I put up with the bullshit. Mm-hmm. 'Cause there is a lot of bullshit. Mm-hmm. And I don't look at you ruefully and be like, oh, you little silly, one day you'll learn, you know? Yeah. Like I heard a great anecdote. I mean, he's such a smart guy and I'm a big fan of David Milch, who's a showrunner, very famous showrunner, did Deadwood and he did NYPD Blue and he did Hill Street Blues. And one of the smartest men that ever walked the face of the earth. He was like a, you know, summa cum laude from Yale and this and that and the other. And he's got Alzheimer's. So he just wrote a book. He wrote a memoir that he's kind of struggling through because he knows he's losing his mind. Because it's always the smartest ones that get it, right? That's just life. It's just, fuck you. You're smart. You're going to get Alzheimer's, right? Mm-hmm. And he was talking about, why do we smile that certain kind of sweet smile when we meet a baby or a puppy?
Aww.
And his explanation was, it's an involuntary reaction where inside our brain we're saying, oh, you dummy. You haven't felt pain. You haven't felt loss. You haven't felt death. Just wait. And we're kind of we're not smiling like, oh, you're going to hurt eventually. Yeah. We're saying like, oh, you're so lucky that everything's fresh and new and exciting. And that's why we get puppies.
Yeah.
And that's why we have babies. And that's why we're around that stuff, because it reminds us not to be so callous and so covered in our armor, to not, especially as artists, to not access our vulnerabilities, which is ultimately our strengths, right? Going back to what we said before, you know, it could be your big nose, or you're too tall, or you're goofy looking when you're young and you grow into your looks. It could also be your vulnerability.
Yeah.
Like for me, it was that I was an artist and a really sensitive kid. And, you know, boys under 11 don't comprehend that. They're like, oh, you must be what they used to use the F word a lot, you know?
Wuss. Let's say wuss.
And we don't use it anymore. Yeah. You know, and it's reminding me to like continue to be open,
I love that.
Continue to be exposed, even when I get hurt. And that's like love. That's like life, you know? And to really be an artist, you have to let the noise in and you have to let it hurt you a little bit, or try not to maybe understand what it's doing. But, you know, catharsis could be, I watched a movie and now I feel better about life. But for an artist, for us that make them, the catharsis is the making.
Yeah.
The movie that me and Ryan made, I got my divorce out. You know,
yeah.
I don't suffer that pain anymore because I got it out and it's truly helped, you know?
Yeah.
So it's that, say like whatever shit you went through coming up, whatever shit you continue to go through as a young, pretty blonde woman that people, either women are going to judge you for being X or men are going to want you for being Y. Mm-hmm. You know, don't shut down.
Yeah.
Don't get too hard.
Thanks for inspiring us, Grace.
I love that. No, it's like tough to like, it's easier said than done for sure to like,
you're like, this asshole, I know what he's going to say.
Yeah,
I can tell
by
the
way.
You're
just like, well, why would
me?
I even try? Yeah. But you're right. It's like, exactly like love. Like most of the time it never works out, but like, why do we still try to fall in love. You know what I mean? Like, we always have to be open.
Love always ends in tears.
It does, yeah. But we want it back. Yeah, exactly. Like, why do we so desperately want it? And it's important to remember to, like, yeah, not become cold, because it's easy to get jaded.
Just quickly. I'm never going to do it again.
Grace, thank you for joining us today. Really, thanks for coming to How I Got Greenlit. Really appreciate it.
Thank y'all so much for having me on. This has been so much fun.
Thanks so much.
You want to go through the plugs one more time? You can see Grace on Lifetime in Go.
Just What the Doctor Ordered, Cheer for Your Life, College Professor Obsession, Spring Break Nightmare coming soon, Twisted Sister coming soon, Bomb Bomb Murders.
I think you're ready for a best of Lifetime. I think they should put out just a special
Grace Patterson weekend.
You know, DVD box
I
set, the
so.
Grace Patterson.
I think that's like the next thing, you know. Then badkiss.com, Bad Kiss Official on Instagram. I'm Grace Victoria Patterson on Instagram. My best friend, Christy Fisher, Christy with an I and a C on Instagram. It's spelled weird, so people always get it wrong. But yeah, those are the plugs.
Thanks.
Great. And for our plugs, join us at howigotgreenlit@gmail.com for any questions or comments, at howigotgreenlit at Instagram and Twitter. And for myself, Alex Collegian,
and Ryan Gibson,
we are How I Got Greenlit. Thank you, Grace Patterson.
Thank you.